Oscar. Oscar wonders how much power the people looking for him actually have. They can track his credit card, he's guessed that much. Early on, he had a scare when a man approached him outside his hotel in Brighton asking, "Mr. Levy, can I talk to you?" Before Oscar escaped, dodging around him and running into the lanes. Since then, he's kept moving, using cash points, then leaving for another town. 8 or so years passed uneventfully, so much so that Oscar had started to relax. In April, in Budapest, he'd been putting rounds of drinks on the card, swiping it in taxis, buying pastries from bakeries. And then the girl he shared a flat with at the time, Carolina, said a man had approached her in the bar where she worked and asked her where Oscar was. The man said he was a friend of Oscar's. Carolina knew it was weird because Oscar had no other friends. "Maybe the police are looking for you," Carolina said, smiling. Oscar couldn't speak at first. There was absolutely no way his body could push enough air out for an answer, let alone move his tongue and lips. Then he realized it was a joke and came out with a weird, throttled little laugh. "So who was it?" asked Carolina. "Do you have a secret friend?" "Sure," Oscar said. "Cool," she said. "I told him that you usually drink here, so he should come back tomorrow." Oscar made some excuse and fled the bar. He was hurrying back to the flat when he noticed there was an expensive car parked on the road opposite it. Cars like this were not usually seen outside Oscar's flat in the shabbier part of town. There was a man in the car. Oscar moved back behind a van and watched the man. For 10 minutes, the man didn't move. He sat perfectly still, watching Oscar's flat. Fortunately, Oscar had his passport with him. By luck, not design, it had been in the same pocket of his backpack since he arrived, so he turned his back on the flat and Carolina and walked until he got to the station. Then he got a train to the airport and left Hungary. Oscar isn't frightened of airports. Whoever is after him seems to have no power there. When Oscar's passport goes under the various scanners, no alarms squawk. Nobody goes poker-faced and asks him to hold on a minute as they turn away and pick up a phone. This doesn't surprise him. He suspects his pursuers are as far outside the law as Oscar himself. Their resources seem to be bribes rather than warrants, surveillance rather than raids. Not that there's much to surveil with Oscar. He hasn't done anything remotely illegal, not since he left England. Before that, he can't remember much, except for the drugs and stealing a gun. He'd give anything to remember what he did with that gun. As Oscar is lying on a lounger in the hotel gardens, a decent distance away from the pool, he remembers a hippie he met once in Amsterdam. The hippie told Oscar a word Oscar had never heard before. Synchronality, or something. The hippie said that apparently meaningless coincidences actually do have meaning, and they show us that we're all one, all part of the universal connectedness. Oscar liked that idea. He's not sure how much he likes it now that lying on a sun lounger next to him is a book that says, in large yellow letters, "A Trip to Remember, Murder, Memory Removal, and Madness." The book has been lying there for a few hours now. Oscar can't see anybody who looks like they might be its owner. Maybe someone left it there by accident when they went back to their room. How ironic, forgetting a book about memory. Oscar wonders if a joke could be made out of it, but his heart isn't in it. It's the book. It's ruining his pleasant mood. He can feel it sending its snarled, synchronous energy in his direction. It's not a coincidence. Not really. The book is a bestseller. It's everywhere. Oscar's seen it already, at an airport. It's about a woman in America named Carol Kurtz, the woman who killed somebody and lied about it. He picks up the book and reads the first couple of pages. Apparently, the setup at Nepenthe makes it impossible to cheat the system. Patients describe the memory to a psychologist. That's how it works. As they're talking about the memory, it's getting vaporized by drugs or electrical currents or something. Despite this, people try to lie. They try to describe something and think about something else at the same time. But apparently, anything like this is painfully obvious, and if it happened, the technicians would just switch off the electrical current. Carol Kurtz tried something a bit different. She gave a partial version of a memory, in the hope that the whole thing would be wiped. She told the clinic that she had had a secret fling overseas and fell in love, but now she wanted to erase the memory of the affair. What she didn't tell them was that when Carol's lover told her he didn't see it as anything more than just sex, they argued and she pushed him off a cliff. Nobody had ever suspected she might be responsible for the guy's disappearance, or at least they didn't until Carol, driven mad by nightmares and partial flashbacks about killing a person she'd never met in a country she'd never been to, ended up confessing most of it by accident to a friend. Oscar feels sick. He puts the book back on the lounger. Unsatisfied, he gets up, picks up his towel and moves to another lounger, further away, where he can't see the book anymore. He chooses a spot under a tree, so it looks like he's just got too hot in the sun. As he sits down, he gives a little approving look up towards the branches, as if to say, "There, that's better."
"What are you doing?"
someone says, just behind him. Oscar jumps violently. Then he realizes it's only Atticus. He should have guessed. The kid has been preoccupied lately with what Oscar is doing. What Oscar's doing in Morocco. What he's doing when he leaves Morocco. What he did before he got there. Is it normal for kids to be this nosy? Is Atticus possibly a ghost? Or a figment of his imagination? "You shouldn't move so quietly," he says. "People might assume you're a ghost."
"You shouldn't read other people's books," says Atticus, sitting on the lounger next to Oscar's.
"Fair point," says Oscar. He calls a waiter over and gets him to bring them two milkshakes.
"I thought you didn't read books," Atticus says. "Because you do the covers."
"Well, I'm on a holiday from that," Oscar says. "Which means I can read if I want to."
"Oh," Atticus says. "Are you married?"
"We're back to the interrogation, are we?" Oscar says, amused. "No, I'm not married."
"I didn't think so. Do you have kids?"
"Nope."
"I didn't think that you did."
"Maybe you should just go with your gut instinct, and then there'll be no need to ask me questions."
"You can ask me questions if you want."
"You already tell me everything. Like, yesterday you told me about your maths homework, and what you had for breakfast, then more homework, then how much iPads cost, and that you're going to the souks later but there's nothing there you want to buy, and you miss your best friend at home, and you don't have a girlfriend but you want one." Atticus looks offended. His woundedness is vast and dignified, like a Siberian plain. He stands in the middle of it, a lonely figure, slurping his milkshake. "I didn't mean that you talk too much," Oscar says. "I like talking to you." "Oh, shit. I didn't mean it like that. I'm sorry."
"It's okay,"
Atticus says. "Good," says Oscar. He lies back and shuts his eyes. Heat patterns dance on the inside of his closed eyes, red on black. He can hear the distant plash of the pool, ploughed by a tanned man in small pants, the chirrup of the blackbirds in the gardens. He can hear, he swears it, Atticus being sad. Oscar opens his eyes, and it's as he suspected. Atticus's eyes have filled with tears. "Hey," he says. "What's up? Was it what I said?" Atticus shakes his head. He wipes his sleeve across his face.
"I'm not crying," he says.
"Of course not," Oscar says.
"It's... I haven't been having a very nice vacation,"
Atticus says.
"My parents are busy, and my brother didn't come because he isn't speaking to them. And I'm lonely. I'm just lonely."
Oscar shuts his eyes. "I'm sorry, man," he says. After a short while, Atticus says,
"Oscar, are you okay?"
"I'm okay," Oscar says. "I'm just a bit lonely too." To Oscar's surprise, Jess calls and comes over again. The two of them sit on Oscar's balcony and share a bottle of wine. The creeper above their heads is covered in gold flowers, like frozen flames. Jess sticks one behind her ear. Then she asks him to slap her when he fucks her and call her a bitch. "What?" Oscar says, shocked. "No way. I can't do that."
"You can."
"I definitely, definitely can't."
"Just try saying it then. Say, you dirty little bitch. Or, suck it, you slut. Or something like that. Improvise."
He tries it without making eye contact, and she laughs.
"Oh dear, you're lucky you're pretty," she says.
Oscar's been told this before. He can't really see it himself. He stared at his own face in the mirror, looking for clues as to his own origins, but nothing strikes him. He has no striking features at all, in fact. Indeterminate color eyes, brown hair, beige skin, symmetrical face, an average face, like a computer composite of every single face in the world. After Jess leaves, the two of them having settled on no insults but a bit of hair pulling, Oscar lies on his back in the bed. His thoughts drift, loose and undirected. A door opens, and he finds himself back in the past. He's standing in what was once a supermarket. The supermarket hadn't been closed for long, but that made it more creepy. The signs for the aisles hanging above him like ghosts, signposting other ghosts. The specters of confectionery, pet food, detergent. The shelves hardly even dusty. It was like the very recent end of the world. Oscar hasn't come across this place before, in his memories or otherwise. He's accordingly suspicious. Is this a real place? How likely is it that anyone would be inside a closed supermarket at night? Come on. Chances are it's either a moment from a bad dream or a horror film.
Or it's what happens when you fall in with the wrong crowd. Oh yeah, that was it. Oscar was what, late teens? He isn't sure. He'd started doing heroin by this time. A lot of the usual time markers, birthdays, Christmases, jobs, holidays, had slipped away. Lonnie was long gone too, vanished along with the rest of Oscar's school friends, gathered up in a tornado and carried away to Oz. No, that's not right. Oscar was the one in the tornado. Oscar. And with him, Lonnie's gun. Who were these people he was with? He can't remember their faces. He probably wouldn't have called them friends. They had heroin, though, which made them all right in Oscar's book. Without really liking them, he shared beds with them. Without trusting them, he let them tie up his arm and administer substances that could be anything, really. He only understood what hit him once it hit him. Without any real thought, he'd showed them the gun, which had been under his bed for a few years now, doing nothing. And now they'd brought it here, to the former supermarket, to debate what it ought to do. Which is where the memory, to Oscar's intense anguish, ends. Oscar really had believed he'd get lost here in Marrakesh, fall through the cracks, slip into the woodwork. But instead, without planning to make friends, he's got two, Jess and Atticus. Without intending to make enemies, he might have made one of those too, in the shape of Zineb, the customer service manager. She's standing in front of him now. Oscar was walking towards the pool when Zineb stepped in front of him, carrying a silver tray with an envelope on it. Oscar swallows. He'd had to pass quite close to the pool to make his way through the sun loungers, and then Zineb moved in, blocking his way forward, and now he's stuck, with the pool behind him and Zineb in front of him, her eyes hard to read. What's that? Oscar makes out. An accusation? Interloper. Fraud. At the same time as her mouth is saying, "I have a letter for you, Mr. Levy. We were asked to sign for it at the desk. It is urgent, apparently." In the corner of Oscar's eye, water splashes, making small smacking noises against the tiled sides of the pool. Do you know who it's from?" he asks, stupidly. "No, sir," Zineb says. She extends the silver plate. Does he have to take the letter? What are the rules here? Oscar takes the letter. "Didn't you tell them, when they called, that I wasn't here?" he asks. Another suspect thing to ask, but fuck it. The gig, or is it the jig, is most definitely up. "We did tell them, sir, as you asked, but that was only 2 days ago. The letter must have been sent before then." Could this be true? Oscar tries to count the days backwards. Plap, plop, splap goes the water. And how is Oscar meant to think with that racket going on? "Is there anything else, sir?" Zineb asks. The letter writers could be on their way here right now, thinks Oscar. They could be here already. And as soon as Oscar's out of sight, Zineb will pick up the phone and say, "Yes, he's here, heading for his room. Please don't make a mess when you remove him." Sweat is being pushed up to the surface of Oscar's skin. Thousands of tiny pinpricks. Water. Closing in. "No," he says. "Thank you." And Zineb, miraculously, turns and walks away. Relief floods Oscar. No, flood is the wrong word. Forget flood. What can he do? All he can do is run. He's got his passport in his pocket, his phone, his untrustworthy credit card. He'll leave everything else in his room. If he just walks out and leaves his room exactly as it is, as if he's coming back, he might even win a head start. He strolls in a chilled-out manner in the direction of the gardens. He finds a bin and posts the letter into it. Then he walks back into the hotel, down the wide corridor, across the great marble floor of reception, trying not to think of it as a frozen lake, trying not to imagine the creaking underneath him. Nodding to the receptionists, the bellhops, the doormen. Nod, nod. "Hello, good morning. Nothing suspect here. Just another rich person. Businessman. In derivatives. The London office has been an utter shitstorm lately. Yeah, don't even mention New York." Aiming all the while for the square of blue sky he can see beyond the pillars of the hotel entrance. The several sets of steps, nearly running down the steps, until finally he is out, out! On the street. Oscar walks into the Medina with a broad and stupid grin. People smile back at him as he goes. He wants to open up his arms and shout it, how much he loves this city, the beautiful twists and turns of it, like the heaps of snakes in the main square, the inked labyrinths of henna. The thing that takes the smile off his face is the thought of Atticus, who is probably on his way to the pool at this moment, looking for Oscar. Which is stupid, really. It's not like Atticus will care if Oscar says goodbye or not. What was Oscar even going to say? Wish him a pleasant life? Good luck with the maths homework? See you around? And even if Atticus did care, it's not like Oscar owes the kid anything. He's only known him a few days. And Atticus is a nosy bastard. He was a nuisance, in fact. He'll probably find someone else to annoy. He's probably at it right now. Oscar stops, causing a small crowd of people to concertina up behind him. He looks back in the direction of the hotel, dimly aware that he's being glared at, a few angry words in various languages. Sorry, he says. He walks on. What else can he do? After an hour or so of wandering the Medina, Oscar calls Jess. No, she says, she doesn't find his idea weird. She'd love him to come and stay at the same Riyadh as her. It's half empty, apparently. She tells him to get his ass down there ASAP because she's missing him. Not just missing the ass, missing the whole lot. Oscar wonders briefly if Jess is an undercover agent. Then he thinks no. She's just a girl who now apparently likes him for more than just his arse, which is another set of problems. But he can think about that later. Jess was right. Oscar has no trouble checking in at her Riyadh. His room overlooks an ornate central courtyard, a lagoon of shade, disturbed only by the twitter of tiny birds and the clonk of the maid's bucket as she moves in a methodical circle over the emerald tiles, mopping up the tiny birds' tiny shits. He feels suddenly shaky. The adrenaline from earlier is all gone. His body feels scraped out and floppy, like the cowhide slung on walls to dry in the sun. He probably smells like a cowhide. His anxiety sweat from earlier attracting the dirt of the Medina, the dust and smoke, forming a paste. He goes to the bathroom and washes his shirt out in the sink. He turns on the shower and gets in. The shower drips a small amount of cold water on him, then stops. He twists the valves back and forth. Nothing happens. He gets out. He looks at the bathtub. Is he scared of baths now? Oscar's unease about water is something that arrived gradually. It crept in, like a leak. He's never been much of a swimmer, as far as he knows, but he used to be fine with water. He once swam in a mountain lake in Switzerland, floating on his back. Then the next time Oscar tried to float like that, he found he'd lost the knack of it. He panicked. His legs fought. He'd flip back up, like a cork. Later still, without any real reason he can remember, he stopped bothering with water. Lakes, seas, swimming pools. He only realized how urgent not bothered with water had got when he was supposed to be boarding a ferry in Croatia and he couldn't get on it. The thought of all that water under him, slopping away at the sides of the boat like something greedy and messy, a big dribbly mouth sucking at the painted metal. Now the prospect of a bath is, well, it's not great. He catches his own eye in the mirror. Oscar, 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 has it come to this? No. He is going to stop being a pussy and run himself a bubble bath like a man. With some of this nice lemon balm bath foam the Riyadh has thoughtfully laid on. And so he does. And aside from having misjudged the temperature somewhat, the hot water stinging his skin and making his face sweat, it actually ends up being a very nice bath. He begins to relax. So much so that he starts to doze off. And there, in the suspended place between awake and asleep, he sees the room. Oscar knows this room. He has a lot of part memories like this, bits and pieces of the past. This is a memory he's familiar, if not comfortable with. It starts with a closed door, with a strange light coming from underneath it, a flat, lifeless light. Behind the door is a white room with no windows, just fluorescent lights. There's a noise, a high buzz. There's a white coat hanging on the back of a door. A chair, the reclining type, with a plastic cover on it, and that's it. There's never any more than that. The room and the chair, it's as far as he ever gets. He lies back. A new memory arrives. Not an early memory this time, a recent one, only a couple of years old. He knows it immediately. Carol Kurtz, the woman who went mad because she did something bad and tried to lie about it to the people who were remodeling her brain. In the article Oscar read, a journalist had interviewed Carol in prison. The journalist said that Carol didn't look evil. She looked dazed. She was on a lot of meds, obviously. The journalist struggled to identify her with the murderess she'd read about. Not a flicker, said the journalist, of whatever she'd been before. The journalist asked Carol Kurtz if it was true that she didn't intend to apply for parole or for early release. Carol nodded. I'm safer here, she said. The journalist asked if Carol was afraid of other people's reactions, vigilantes and so on. Not other people, Carol said. Me. I don't know myself. I don't trust myself. Oscar doesn't know himself. He doesn't trust himself. Why did he want that gun? What did he do with that gun?